Hey, you guys. Time once again for Flickers of Fear. I know several of you guys have been waiting for this one. I was actually going to do this one later on in the month, but then I was talking to a friend of mine when I was out at the club the other day, and, you know, he's a big horror movie fan too, so he's always like, we're always giving each other recommendations, and he was like, oh, you should watch the new Hellraiser. You know, you'd probably really like it. So I was like, all right, why not? And a couple of you guys like asked about it too, so I said, what the fuck, I'll, you know, push it up into the schedule and have a look at it. So I'm coming at this, like, I'm a big Clive Barker fan. Like, I'm a big fan of his fiction, and I've actually read most of his stuff, not all of it, but a pretty significant portion of his novels and stuff that I have read them. But I find that most film adaptations of his books or stories really fall pretty short of these kind of fantastical grotesqueries that he like puts out in his work. There are exceptions to that. Obviously, 1992's Candyman was really, really good. I love that movie. And I actually have a soft spot for The Midnight Meat Train from 2008. I thought that was a really, really good adaptation of one of his short stories. So those are like rare exceptions. And obviously, 1987's excellent Hellraiser, which was actually directed by Clive Barker himself, was also really, really good. And that was actually based on a novella that he had written in 1986 called The Hellbound Heart. Now, while I love the first Hellraiser movie, and Hellraiser 2 Hellbound is actually pretty damn good too, if you haven't seen it. It's not as good as the first one, but it's like pretty fucking decent. I never really got into it as a franchise, and I don't think I bothered to watch any of the movies past the second one. I might have seen the third one, but I don't really like remember anything about it, so it didn't really make an impression. Now, from everything I've heard about the sequels, I was probably wise to just kind of jump off that train, because I didn't even know this until today, but the original Hellraiser movie got 9 sequels, many of which were made, they were just kind of like cash grab type stuff. The only reason they made them was so they could retain the rights to the original IP. So they just had to like put out a new Hellraiser movie every so often just so they could keep their hands on the rights, like the production company or however that works. I think too, there's at least from what I could determine, after 1996's Hellraiser Bloodline, the movies, I don't think they were even originally written or intended as Hellraiser movies anymore. Basically, like the production company or the filmmakers or whatever would just take like some random horror script that was laying around, wedge Pinhead in there, call it Hellraiser colon whatever, and just call it a day, you know what I mean? Matter of fact, the most recent Hellraiser sequels, which was 2011's Hellraiser Revelations and 2018's Hellraiser Judgment, didn't even have Doug Bradley in them. And I'm actually surprised that Doug Bradley was in 8 of the things, because I didn't even like fucking realize that he was in that many. But after like 2011, he's like, yeah, I'm out. You know, I think I'm done. But props to him. He's amazing. And of course, he originated that character, and it's just like such a great character, and he's so associated with it. But I haven't seen like the last two that he wasn't in, but I've seen stills from it, and the Pinhead in that looks really, really dorky, looks really goofy. So I don't, you know, no shade on the actor or anything like that, and I don't know, maybe it's fine, but I don't know, the stills look like pretty, it is like the makeup is bad too, like you can tell like it's really, really cheap. So, you know, there's that. So what I'm trying to get at, I guess, is that the Hellraiser franchise has been ailing for quite a while. And so it seemed kind of like ripe for a reimagining. Now, Clive Barker, matter of fact, had apparently been thinking about remaking the original film as early as 2006, but for various reasons, nothing concrete really happened with it until 2019, when Spyglass Media Group got the rights to it, and they got the screenwriter / producer David S. Goyer on board. Now, he's done a lot of, he's, like I said, mostly a screenwriter, so he's done a lot of, you know, superhero type films like Batman vs. Superman. I think he did like a bunch of those type ones. But he also wrote the Blade trilogy and Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. So probably like his best stuff there. So he came on board as a producer. And the script for this new Hellraiser was written by Ben Collins and Luke Piotrowski, who are the same team. I think I brought them up before when I was talking about another movie, but these are the same guys that wrote the screenplays to Super Dark Times, which I reviewed not too long ago, and The Night House, which I also reviewed not too long ago. And this was directed by David Bruckner, who co-directed The Signal, which is really good, The Ritual from 2017, which was also excellent, and he directed The Night House, which with Rebecca Hall, which I liked a lot. So they got kind of all that talent involved and were finally able to bring a new Hellraiser to Hulu, the streaming service, in 2022. So is it any good, you may be asking me? Surprisingly, yes, I liked it quite a bit. It was actually much better than I was expecting. I mean, I guess I went into it with low expectations, and because my friend had told me, he's like, well, just go in, he's like, don't expect it to be the same movie as the old one, or they kind of like went a different direction with it, but he's like, it's still really good and it's really worth watching. So that's really the only expectation I had. So I said, oh, this will be pretty good. And it was pretty good. And like I said, better than I expected. Now, I have seen some reviews that refer to it as a remake or as another adaptation of the novella. That is absolutely not accurate. This new Hellraiser doesn't follow any of the characters or any of the plot beats from The Hellbound Heart, like, you know, the original novella, or the 1987 adaptation of it. This movie, as I'm presuming some of the sequels did, because I'm not really sure, because I didn't see any of them past two and maybe three, I'm not really sure, but I don't know what happened with the mythology past that point. But this actually follows a different set of characters who stumble across the iconic, Le Marchand configuration. So, I mean, that's really one of the best things, I guess, about the whole puzzle box conceit, is that this box is always kind of floating around out there in the world somewhere, and new people are always either, like, finding it, stumbling across it accidentally, or seeking it out deliberately, like, knowing what it can do, so you can do a lot of stuff within those parameters. Now, this movie does go lighter on the whole sadomasochistic angle, which is understandable because, you know, all of that imagery isn't really that shocking or transgressive as it absolutely was back in 1987. Because back in 87, when the original Hellraiser came out, nobody had made a horror movie with that imagery in it before. But now, you know, it's this many years later, everybody's seen that now, so it's not like shocking to anybody anymore. So they decided to go in a different direction with it, which obviously was like the best thing to do. But I will say this does have really good, like, relatable characters with some depth to them. At least, like, the main characters have some depth to them. I really liked the really cool updated Cenobite looks. And also, this was, like, much gorier than I was expecting. I don't know why I expected them to, like, tamp down the gore, the body horror, but they actually did, like, a pretty good job, especially, like, I think the last bit. I don't want to, like, spoil it because this is, like, brand new, but the last bit, if you've seen it, you know what I'm telling, the last guy that gets, you know, it's just really good. I really, really like the way that it looks. It's very, very visceral and, like, really cool. So what happens in this movie? There's kind of, like, an extended prologue, I guess, if you want to call it that. And this involves a depraved billionaire named Roland Voigt and his interactions with the puzzle box. Like, he knows what it is, and he actually, like, sought it out for its intended purpose, so there's that. So after that, we kind of get into the main part of the story. So our main protagonist is named Riley, and she's played by Odessa Azayan. I guess I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's a recovering addict, and she lives in an apartment with her brother Matt and Matt's boyfriend Colin, and then they have another roommate named Nora. So they all, like, live in this big apartment together. Riley has also been on again, off again, seeing this guy, like, new boyfriend named Trevor, who Matt has a bad feeling about, mainly because Riley met him at one of her 12-step programs, and he's kind of, like, afraid that she's going to relapse, like, with him around, you know what I'm saying? But Riley insists that Trevor's a good guy, and she kind of, like, resents her brother's interference in her life, I guess. I have to say that Odessa Azayan is absolutely kills it in this role. I kind of feel like in the context of the story and all of the baggage that her character has, like, with her addiction, and she's the way she comes across, it's like, you know, she's having a hard time, but she does come across as, like, kind of selfish or kind of immature or something like that, and that could very easily make her character come off as unlikable. But I actually didn't find her unlikable at all. I mean, yeah, she's fucked up, and yeah, she has some major issues, But to me, she still came across as very, like, you understood, like, where she was coming from. She still came across as, like, endearing and somewhat sympathetic. And she was kind of like, I think it was maybe, like, her sense of humor kind of endeared me to her as well. I did see some reviews that didn't think she was all that likable, but I don't agree with that. I think she was quite likable, even though, like I said, she was obviously a very, very troubled and damaged person. So I just want to, like, give a shout out to her, because it seemed like her acting performance here was, like, really, really genuine and really, really natural, and it really did help you it helped you see her as just, like, this is a real person who's, you know, maybe doing some fucked up shit, but, you know, she's a real person and she's hurting, and you kind of, like, empathized with her somewhat. So Trevor, just like Matt suspected, being a bad influence, Trevor convinces Riley, oh, they're going to make some extra cash by breaking into this big, like, storage container, one of those big ones that's, like, a size of a train car type thing. Now he says that this thing has been abandoned for a really long time, like, no one's coming to get whatever the fuck is in here, you know, it's fine. Now he says he apparently used to work at this shipping yard where the container is, and he's like, all the shipments that came in that he saw, you know, they all had all of these really expensive objects and antiques and shit like that, which had been purchased abroad by, like, super rich people, and then, you know, shipped over here. So, long story short, too late, they break into this massive container, and all that's in there is this little safe, like, right in the middle. So they manage to bust into the safe, and that is what ends up putting the fated Le Marchand configuration into their clueless hands. Now, Trevor kind of shrugs and says, well, it's got to be worth something. Otherwise, why would it be, like, locked up in here like this? So he tells Riley, why don't you hang on to it? I'm going to, like, you know, talk to my contacts and stuff like that and see if I can negotiate some money and we'll split it. Riley, meanwhile, falls off the wagon, and this causes a blistering argument between her and her brother, and her brother ends up, like, kicking her out of the apartment. Apparently, she hadn't been paying the rent, too. Like, he's been covering her ass for, like, several months, and I guess it's just everything comes to a head, and he just can't take it anymore. He's like, just get the fuck out, get your shit, and get out of here. So, she kind of goes on a little bit of a downward spiral, gets completely fucked up on booze and some pills that she had left over. I'm not sure exactly what they were. While she's doing that, she inadvertently makes the puzzle box, like, she's kind of fucking around with it, and it moves into one of its other configurations, and she starts freaking out as she gets her first glance of the Cenobite. Now, because she's so wasted, though, she isn't entirely sure if what she's seeing is real. I mean, obviously, she's like, ooh, this is, like, some potent shit, you know what I mean? I'm seeing, like, fucking sadomasochistic rape demons or whatever. Also, because she tries to, like, tell her, friends about it, and they all kind of think, yeah, we've been down this road before. That's just, like, the drugs and booze talking, like, you're just hallucinating, yada yada. So no one believes her at first. Not long after this, though, the reality of the situation becomes all too evident after Riley's brother Matt gets taken by the Cenobites in one particular scene. And so the rest of the movie is basically Riley going on this frantic journey of discovery, trying to figure out, where did this box come from, who owned it before, like, what does it do, all this other kind of stuff, hoping that she can use this knowledge to bring her brother back from wherever the fuck, you know, whatever hell dimension he got, like, sucked into. So, as I said, this movie is actually more of its own story taking place inside the Hellraiser universe, rather than a direct adaptation of the novella or a remake of the 1987 film. So I think you could technically say it was a sequel. Like I said, I didn't really see any of the later sequels, so I don't really know how that mythology, like, developed, and I don't know if this is, like, a complete reboot or it's just, like, a complete side mission, or I'm not really sure. You could totally see it as a sequel, though, but it is absolutely not an adaptation of The Hellbound Heart. The story is completely different. None of the characters are the same. So just don't go into it expecting that same plot again. And honestly, like I said, I think this was probably the best approach for updating the franchise because, I mean, the mythology surrounding the puzzle box and the Cenobites is complex enough that it can encompass lots of new stories within that same framework. I liked, too, there was a connection made between Riley struggles with her addiction, you know, with drugs and booze or whatever, and the obsessive sensation seeking of people that coveted the box, like the billionaire. I really liked that connection, and it's very well done. I did not find it heavy-handed at all. You know, your mileage may vary on that. So, I mean, to me, it's like the metaphor was just, like, there if you wanted to explore it, but if you didn't want to, you didn't have to. You know what I mean? It wasn't too, like, in your face with it. At least I didn't find it that. Also want to give a particular shout-out to Jamie Clayton, who is the new iteration of Pinhead. Now, here in the movies, just Pinhead is just called the Hell Priest, which is more in keeping with the spirit of the original source material in the original movie, which obviously never referred to the character as the Pinhead nickname, because that was just like a nickname that he got later on. It's not called that like in any of the stories or anything. So Jamie Clayton wisely chose not to try to fill Doug Bradley's substantial shoes and kind of like puts her own spin on the character. So her interpretation of it is a lot more alien, is a lot more aloof, is a lot more still. It's just very otherworldly, and I kind of liked that kind of take on the character. The other Cenobites look pretty cool too, and I like that the creature designs that they did essentially have the Cenobites like wearing outfits kind of that are made out of their own skin and viscera. Like, it looks like they've been, like, cut into strips and, like, made into, like, little, which I thought was, like, really cool, like, a really good idea. Rather than, you know, the original 1987 movie that had them dressed, like, in kind of bondage gear, leather and bondage, vinyl bondage gear. So I like that they just did it with their skin, so it looked like their flesh is all flayed and shit like that. Like, they're not even wearing clothes, but it's just, yeah, I just thought that was, like, a cool idea. The movie's a little bit dark, so I kind of wish that it had been, like, a little, because I think I saw, like, a lot of reviewers, like, saying how murky it was. I didn't find it that dark, but I do kind of wish they had lightened it up slightly, just so you could see, because the Cenobite designs were so cool, and I kind of wish that they would have had it a little bit lighter so you could, like, see the detail in them a little bit more. But, I mean, just from looking at them, even though it was kind of dark, like, you could still tell that they looked really rad. And really, other than that, the only minor criticisms that I could give of the film is it's a slightly long. I mean, it's almost exactly 2 hours, which, you know, it's just like a touch deal. I didn't feel like it dragged or anything like that, but it probably didn't need to be that long. And the fact that some of the side characters, like particularly Colin and Nora, are kind of like underdeveloped, like they don't really spend enough time with them. But neither of those nitpicks are really deal breakers for me. It's not really that big a deal. I will say too that this version of Hellraiser is much slicker than the kind of more seedy 80s version, but that didn't really bother me all that much as either. I mean, as I mentioned before, the cultural context in which the original came out, you know, the culture has changed so much since that time. So, like, the same qualities that made that, like, so, like I said, like, seedy and underground and, like, fucked up and, you know, and gritty and everything like that, like, it doesn't really play the same nowadays just because the culture is so different than it was in 1987. So, you know, they changed it, they went with that direction, and I think that was, like, the right choice to make. Now, while this movie isn't brilliant, it's not a masterpiece or anything like that, but I found it, like, a really compelling, really entertaining, and very respectful entry. You can tell that the people that made this, like, really care about this franchise and really care about these characters and really wanted to do something substantive, you know. And honestly, like, you can't shit on it too much because the fucking because all the other sequels of it have, as far as I've heard, are, like, terrible and just, like, cheap cash grabs. So it's nice to see a movie that was obviously made with care and with love for the source material, and that does absolutely come through in this movie. So, you know, it has also has, like, really, really memorable imagery. I really particularly liked, like, the house with the big cage thing on the outside, like, if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. And I really like a lot of the gore. Like I said, it was, like, really creative, particularly, like, the last scene with the flaying. I thought that was like really, really cool and really well done. It's like really icky and like you could really kind of feel it. And I thought that was really well done. It's probably CGI, but it's really, really good CGI. I don't know. Maybe it was practical effects. I kind of feel like it was CGI, but it doesn't look like bad CGI. But yeah, so let me know what you guys thought about the new Hellraiser in the comments, because I've been seeing it seems kind of like a lot of people really, really didn't like it all that much. Some people, I haven't seen anybody like love it, but a lot of people were like, oh hey, that was like pretty good, which is where I'm at. Like, I don't know if I loved it, but it was pretty damn good, and it was like way better than I was expecting it to be. But I have seen like some reviewers that didn't like it for one reason or another, so I'm kind of curious as to what you guys thought about it if you saw it. So let me know in the comments, and that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear. I'll see you guys again on the next one. Bye.